Hello, my name is Kennedy Sam, and welcome to this week's edition of Conversations with Creative Waco. We are a fourth Friday feature on KWBU, and on months like this one, a fifth Friday too. Keep listening for conversations with creatives and community leaders making an impact in our artistic and cultural sector. Today's episode is all about new beginnings. First, we'll be joined by Swayze Ray, who is a creative entrepreneur, creative director, and founder of Blonde Mink, and project catalyst for Studio 1124. We'll talk about the intersection of art and life, stretching the bounds of entrepreneurship, and doing what brings you joy. In the second half of this show, we welcome Doug McDurham, who recently joined the Art Center of Waco as their new executive director. Doug will share about their new space, his new role, and the brand new exhibit featuring works by famed Kermit Oliver. Later on, we'll hear the segment David and Art with David Smith. To kick off this episode, we welcome Swayze Ray to our table. Swayze, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Kennedy. How about you?
I'm great. So let's start with a little intro of who Swayze is and how your journey to Waco.
So originally I'm from the upstate of South Carolina, from Greenville, and I had kind of a lions and tigers and bears kind of journey to get here. So I started at Clemson in biochemistry and went to Penn State College of Medicine, became a doctoral candidate there, so lions.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And then finally found my way here to Waco as a Baylor Bear, finishing up a PhD in biochemistry. And trying to pivot to a whole new realm of artwork versus just STEM work. So looking to integrate.
Yeah. So when people think of STEM and the type of people who are normally in that kind of category, they're real like serious people, real like to cut straight through line people because they're thinking analytically all day. But you have such a creative vibe and aspect to your personality. How did you find your love and passion for the arts?
So I'm really fortunate. So in Myers-Briggs, I'm an INFJ, and they really do prosper on the balance of the right brain and the left brain. But where that really comes from for me is very, very early on. I started in music. I've been playing violin for now 28 years.
Wow.
So you can imagine that the integration of how music definitely fits into the art and the stream of consciousness way of thinking, so the creative flow process, and being able to do that in an integrative way. So when I do science, I think of it in three dimensions. So it's the art of science, which I think is a very important way to approach it. I'm also very fortunate in the sense where, you know, a lot of people do ask me, well, why science? I think on some level that if anybody is born gifted or talented and is tagged that way, it's important for parents to think about where that best fit is. I'm very fortunate where I do come from a family that's very humble. Both my parents were raised in Mill Hills of South Carolina. And of course, thinking about fashion or thinking about creative direction mm-hmm. is something that's so foreign. How can they help me be successful? Versus being in STEM, where they were able, as first-generation college students, to see professors, to see scientists, to see that that's a good and stable income. And so definitely I was pushed into that field, but I've always loved academia. And academia is where the exploration and the open-ended really got me looking at different ways, different avenues to integrate all of that together. And I think that when you think of it as a chemist, right, especially when you think about just the way that we portray chemistry, I do a little bit of molecular modeling, for instance, in my thesis. And so being able to help that be more visual, help that be more available to anybody to look at, I think is a very important thing. Being able to integrate the way that a science person or a smart, quote-unquote, person is able to approach is really to think that smart people should be in arts as much as possible. They should be in business as much as possible. You know, if I could have done it all over again, I might have gotten a finance degree just to make sure that I always had, something in the bank to be able to launch and to be able to try new things. Mm-hmm. Have good, strong resources. And so I really encourage, especially even with my younger students, you know, grades are indications of one's acumen. They're indications of one's work. And if you're very good at something, you could be very good at lots of things. And I think the more smart people, like I said, that are able to go into arts and be very savvy and be very smart, I think it's going to shift that realm entirely, especially when you have to be a creative and an entrepreneur as a balance nowadays. Yeah. So many things you have to know how to do to be successful.
Yeah. So as a creative entrepreneur yourself, and as yourself, what has been one of the things that you've learned the most about the process that has surprised you?
So I think it's the process when it comes to developing one's creative ability is actually the integration of one's communication. So one of the things that I really was able to learn, especially when I was in Pennsylvania, so I had 2 years between one degree and moving here to Waco. And in that time, I was a budding person in a very new field. When you get your degree very quickly, no one gives you $1 million lab. And so I wanted to learn some new skills. And the way that I did that was through sales and marketing. So I became an executive manager for a Fortune 50 company in telecom. But you don't start there, especially if you don't have any skills. Yeah. So like any, world-class chef, they often start as a dishwasher. And I started by knocking doors and selling cable and was able to see how it is that people are inspired, not sold to, but able to see the integration of how do you make people happy? Mm-hmm. How do you inspire them? How do you create conduits? And I think that creative projects do that all the time. So fashion is a way for people to be inspired, but also to be really honest about who they are. I think as a true introvert, even though I have some extroversion there, is that I like to speak with my presence. And art really allows someone to fill the negative space mm-hmm. of their presence so that they are understood beyond logic, beyond that strong analytical side versus being able to flow and to be appreciated as one is. And so when thinking about how things sell themselves, things present themselves, and that how we actually approach each other, how we treat each other's thinking with respect, mm-hmm. Came from sales and marketing and being able to teach others to have that art of communication, but also that art of being able to have doors slammed in your face. Yeah. One of the biggest things about the art world and the science world is that getting funding is a struggle, of course. And so being able to have that stiff upper lip, those bootstraps that are constantly on your mind, a no is just next, right. Really. And so I think having doors slammed in my face, hundreds of them, and learning from law of averages, I'm finding that one person that I can serve, finding that household that's going to be bettered by what it is that I have to offer them. And so as a creative, that's something that can have such a large or a global aspect. Mm-hmm. And I think that being able to bring fashion to the forefront, especially because of how I think as a millennial, we think about green, we think about the environment. As a chemist, I think about the idea of how can I have the biggest impact?
Yeah.
So to maybe transition into that is that, I wanted to do something that was as conscious as possible. And as a chemist that does cancer research and a breast cancer survivor myself, I thought about what is my way of doing that. So with vintage things, because that's right. Definitely an entirely different market. Mm-hmm. So it's not just being a creative, but thinking about fashion history and thinking about conservation. We are a green glamour firm, so to speak. And so I thought, when we think about the impact of what we're doing here in America versus what we see globally, we think about manufacturing, we think about dyeing. There's no more wasteful process than dyeing on drinking water, on air. When we think about tanning leather, we think about being able to ship and to make things, fibers, textiles. Yeah. I'm from South Carolina, so we're very mindful of that.
Yeah, and we're finding a lot of those issues right now with the supply chain and backup where we're just not having the same access to the same resources we have. So we're having to get a little creative in what we use these days.
Naturally, and I think that we're starting to rediscover what vintage is, mm-hmm. And that, Dita Von Teese talks about this as well, where she never could afford nice clothes, and the nicest things she had were always secondhand, always vintage. And man, it really gets your entrepreneurial mind going when you're like, wow, I can buy something that's going to appreciate in value. Mm-hmm. Vintage things appreciate, classic cars appreciate, antiques appreciate.
Right.
And so when you think about the gratefulness, because appreciation is all about gratefulness, you can discover this beautiful power of second chance. And being able to do that in a way where our global footprint is such that when we're doing cancer research, we're thinking about the impacts of the environment, the impacts of lifestyle. But when you think about people that have to be in manufacturing or have to be in conditions that are very toxic, if we're not making new things, then those environments do not sustain. And I think that being able to be conscious as a global consumer, to be able to reuse and reevaluate, and to be able to look at what we have. So many really famous fashion people are all about the curated capsule. They live in tiny places, New York, London, Tokyo. And they have those those core, you know, items that really express their person, and they build around that so many times. And so even in developing the aesthetic of Blonde Mink,
right,
that was one of the things that was very important to me, because even in South Carolina, Mill Hill, very humble, you know, derivation of life, if you were to get a mink stole or a mink coat, that was a big deal. And you kept it, and you kept it for generations and generations. And so that's the biggest heart piece. That's why I named my company Blonde Mink, because when I think about, you know, a grandmother having something and passing it down, having heirlooms, that is something that now we have this soulful connection to our roots with a luxury item that can continue to have life, where somebody might continue to purchase something. It's even, I think, more affordable nowadays.
Yeah. So with your intersection of fashion, arts, music, how do you utilize your space at Studio 1124?
I'm glad you asked. So we're doing a few smaller projects. So for instance, with Studio 1124, we're trying to develop, because we have great acoustics and a room that is great for taking pictures in, that we're doing a similar project as the cross session between a color show as well as Tiny Desk. So we're having local artists come in, and a videographer, being able to just take video of them, you know, unplugged, unwound in their casual and natural environment. And being able to develop that on YouTube and on a in a virtual space allows this hub that we have here at Waco, where we can be able to draw in more and more. And the cross promotion, I think, will shift us from, you know, who can get the most gigs to now the gig is national. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting lots of prosperity. The other element of that is that with art, of course, being able to set the stage, to set the mood, and being able to have people feel comfortable in those environments and present them well. Even a color show has a specific color that really helps the visualization of the mood, the aesthetic, the vibe.
Yeah.
And so being able to think about the production that is entertainment, the production that is art, the production that is creative direction. And as a photographer and an editorial and performance stylist, it gives me a heck of a lot of practice, you know, being able to work with people that are up and coming and defining what it is their brand is, what it is their impact and influence will feel like to others. Mm-hmm. How can I connect them to those that way will make happy? You know, the whole point here is to, I want to make people happy with my work. I want to inspire them. I want to open that. So the people that I serve as clients and as artists, as well as the community that I serve as customers and as patrons, is really the artistic balance that I really strive for.
When do you guys see that coming to programming?
So we're still working on that project, and definitely we'll see that very, very soon. You can definitely check it out on Instagram. So at Blonde Mink Vintage, don't forget the E, on Instagram. We'll definitely have more announcements about that. It's the same thing where with Scene, we had the gallery show. So we do have a series of that with Sesh. So we had a performance artist come in. So we're doing canvas murals in the house. And then obviously you can come and see the curated capsule at Cameron. So anything that I take photos of, you know, are definitely free for the public to be able to purchase. Just got to find it on the second floor. It's a little bit of a treasure hunt there.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Swayze, for joining us today. We hope to speak with you again and get a deeper insight to all the things you guys are doing over there.
Well, thank you, sir, very much for having me, Kennedy. It's been an utmost pleasure.
Thanks. You can follow Blonde Mink Vintage on Facebook and Instagram at Blonde Mink Vintage. Don't forget the E. And you can find her capsule collection at Cameron Trading Post on the second floor.
This is 103.3 Waco Public Radio. Getting into new art can sometimes cause us to reflect on our own settled tastes. Here's David Smith with this week's edition of David and Art.
A long time ago, I worked at a record store. I really enjoyed it. Every couple of months, each of the employees got to pick a new album to open that we would play on the house sound system. Inevitably, a subtle contest developed over whose music got played more. I thought I knew what was good, and that's what I wanted to hear. And it isn't that what I liked wasn't good, but everything I didn't want to listen to, everything the other employees picked, particularly a college student named Derek, was automatically not as good. It seems like when it comes to our opinions, we can either be open or receptive or double down on what we already like. I was aggressively in the latter camp then. One of the great things about getting into art is that you can always find something that's new to you. Even if it's something that's hundreds of years old, if you've never heard it or seen it, it's new. I've said many times that the more you learn about art, the more likely you are to find new favorites, and that's true. There's a slight downside, though, if you're complacent or if you're particularly comfortable with all of your tastes being just as they are. One of the things that new art can do is unsettle us. Great art, even good art, makes us think and see things in new ways. And even more than that, it can force us to rearrange those fixed, comfortable patterns in our tastes. If you find something new that you like, it forces you to move all of your preferences around and re-examine them. It forces you to rearrange the luggage down in your hold. There's a lot in common between how we learn more about art and how we learn more about history. It's astonishing how many of my students come in certain that Columbus was the only person in 1492 who thought the earth was round. When I tell them otherwise, they then, with furrowed brows, process through everything that comes with having to re-examine. Learning new things about history forces you to readjust what you once felt sure of, maybe that you held dear, and new information can sometimes be tenaciously resisted. I bet we could think of some examples of that. Art doesn't have to be confrontational, but new art does move things around in your tastes. If you think that Beethoven is the end of the conversation about great music and that's all you listen to, you're going to be shook up a little bit when you discover William Grant Still's symphonies. Or like when decades later you find yourself avidly listening to the Talking Heads, you realize that maybe your 19-year-old self didn't really know everything there was to know about music after all.
You can find this and past segments on our website at kwbu.org. Look for David and Art in the Programs tab.
Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. We are back and joined by Doug McDurham, the new executive director of the Art Center of Waco, to share about the organization, their new space, and Kermit Oliver's current exhibit. Doug, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, we're so glad to have you, and welcome. So I know you aren't new to Waco, so can you give us a little overview on how you kind of got to this table right here today?
Sure. My family moved to Waco in 2000, so we've been here 21 years. We came for a job and thought it would be temporary, but fell in love, like many people do, and decided to make it our permanent home.
So the Art Center of Waco also is not a new organization. Can you talk a little bit about its role in our community and in the past, and kind of how it got from where it is now from its old space on MCC's campus?
Sure. So the Art Center was created in 1972. It was a group of community volunteers who said, we really don't have a centralized space for visual arts in our community. So what can this look like? You know, what can we do? The Chamber of Commerce was our first host almost 50 years ago. Wow. We were officed in their space for a little while the board worked out a space. And then we moved into the Cameron Summer House on MCC's campus. MCC was incredibly generous with us for almost 40 years. And that was our home base. It was a beautiful location, almost retreat-like.
Yeah.
It's become, you know, very loved. And so when the time came to leave there, it was a difficult process for us as an organization, for a lot of our supporters. But when the board started looking for a new space, they really decided that downtown was where we needed to be. The board found this location. It was a vacant building. Quite a few folks questioned, I think, the wisdom of, you know, looking around. This is a, you know, bombed out looking shell of
a
space.
Big task.
It is a big task.
We're in the land of fixer-uppers. So seeing that come to life has just been such an awesome process. And so we're excited to see how the space continues to be used.
So many folks tend to have low expectations for our community. I think that's maybe one of the things that is most disappointing about Waco, and maybe one of the only things, is that folks tend to have low expectations. And so folks walk in and they're like, this looks like something you would see in Austin. Yeah. Like, no, this looks like something you see in Waco.
Yeah,
Austin folks want to come up here and see this.
People who support it and their vision for it and, you know, things like this, when they come to our community, it just further shows that we have the talent, we have the resources, we have the support here. And, you know, by just coming and showing a face, writing your name down in a book, you are on the floor, on the foot data that, you know, we need this in our community.
We do. And everyone needs to own it. Like, you know, yes, we're absolutely capable. And, you know, this is a happening place.
Yeah.
And we can do happening things.
So what attracted you to the arts?
So, you know, I don't know how that actually started. I think in college, I didn't grow up spending a lot of time in the arts. In college, I was pretty focused on just exposing myself to as many new things as possible. And so I took a lot of classes that I had no talent for, but, you know, high interest in. And I took oil painting and piano and, you know, things that I, you know, really never did again, but just, you know, exposed me to new ideas, new ways of looking at the world. And there was a gallery on campus, and really the first time that I, you know, sort of readily identified with an art gallery. And so I'd go in and, you know, experience art pieces. There was public art on the campus, performances. And so I think that just was maybe a birth for me.
Yeah. So, you know, as a budding arts person and into moving into this new role and launching in a time when you're coming into a new building, but not only that, but you are launching with an exhibition featuring the Kermit Oliver. How did that come up? How did you guys decide that this is what we're going to open our doors with?
Well, that decision was made obviously before I got there, but the board really wanted to start with a bang.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to introduce the new space, and you know, really a new rethought through Art Center in general in a way that would be impressive and engaging. The center's had a long history with Kermit. He's exhibited with us twice, you know, a lot of relationships. And so when he was approached, he was readily willing. In fact, he did a painting specifically to commemorate the opening of the center. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, with his permission to made prints of it that we're selling that really celebrate Waco, celebrate him, celebrate our community. And, you know, we just wanted to open the doors with a bang.
Yeah. So the exhibition features, what, over 40 works?
54.
54 works.
54 works, yeah. including 7 scarves.
Yeah. So how were those chosen and how was, like, the overall experience curated?
So we had a really interesting curation setup. So we had 2 curators for this show. Lance Magid, owner of Studio Gallery, is a board member. And because of his professional work in his gallery, he has a relationship with a lot of local folks who own art and are art supporters. So he knew and was able to help us connect with so many local Wacoans, mm-hmm. who have treasured pieces of Kermit's work, and that really brought in, you know, sort of this breadth. And then Susie Khalil is a curator and author. She's working on an enormously comprehensive book about Kermit Oliver. She's been working for 3 years, probably has, by her estimation, a couple more years of research to go. She's been traveling the country, meeting with collectors, meeting with owners of Kermit's work. And so she was our guest curator. And her connections and her relationships then allowed us to bring in works from folks out of town, which really meant that we have the best of both worlds in this exhibit.
And then on opening day, I was just shocked to see just the difference in sizes and ranges. But I was even more surprised that, you know, all of these were pieces, for the most part, that were brought from across Texas. Right. So how did those relationships from outside of Waco come to support you guys?
So absolutely. So Susie was our biggest connection for the pieces, for most of the pieces, not all, but most of the pieces that were outside of Waco. Dr. Greg Shannon, a Houston surgeon, was the largest lender to this exhibit, and he was just incredibly generous with us. This show would not be, I mean, it would still be an impressive show. You gather three of Kermit Oliver's paintings, and it's going to be, you know, a moving experience, one even. But with Dr. Shannon's pieces, really added to the depth and the breadth and the sheer size of the exhibit. He is the largest collector of Kermit Oliver's works. Wow. And he and Kermit had not met. So this show gave them sort of the opportunity to get together and visit. They had some time to get together and talk before the opening night. And then, you know, he was there, gave us a great opportunity to meet him. He, in fact, gave two pieces to the center that were part of our live auction that night to help make sure we can pay the light bills for the next few months. So we're deeply appreciative of him.
That is awesome. So this exhibit will be open until December, right?
December 17th.
December 17th. What's coming next? Like, what do you guys have in future programming, and what, as the new executive director, what do you hope, you know, your role is in the direction that you hope to take the Arts Center moving forward?
Sure. So there's a lot. So exhibit-wise, we are we're putting together a pretty exciting menu of opportunities for 2022. We will have a glass artist who does some very interesting community-based pieces and has some very creative work. We have a photographer who is a National Geographic photographer, is going to be a super exciting exhibit and maybe the most exciting and fun opening night celebration to an event that Waco has ever seen. The party that is planned for that is going to be awesome. We also have classrooms and our education programs. And so our children programming has continued through our time without a building, but certainly scaled back, and certainly scaled back because of COVID. And we've had very small classes and, you know, able to spread folks out. But now as we're, you know, moving into a new stage and we have good classroom space with good ventilation, we'll be upping our children's programming. In January, we'll restart our adult classes. And so we've been talking with photographers and figure painters and a variety of folks. And then we're going to be incorporating family events in 2022. So we've got some pretty cool things. We've got that great multipurpose space that right now is being used for the exhibit, but will allow us to put on some pretty exciting events.
Yeah, so everyone keep your 22 calendar
open. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Doug, for joining us today. We're so excited to have you in this new role and have you downtown with us.
Thank you.
The Art Center Waco's new location is open at 701 South 8th Street Monday through Saturday. Kermit Oliver's exhibit, New Narratives, New Beginnings, will be on display until December 17th. Connect with the Art Center of Waco on Facebook and Instagram at Art Center Waco, or visit their website, artcenterwaco.com, for updates on what's coming to the space. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org, and you can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Catch the next episode on Friday, November 26th for more deep dives into local arts and culture. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Thanks for tuning in.